Hello and welcome to another episode of City on a Hill, a podcast about what it means to be a citizen of heaven and a citizen of the United States. We want to encourage Christians to find their tribe in the church and their hope in the kingdom of God, rather than to seek both in the kingdom of man. So with that, let's get to it today.
Well, hello, I'm Eric Estep.
And I'm Scott Reevely.
And this is the City on a Hill podcast. Welcome back, listeners. Welcome back, Scott. Scott, how are you doing today? We were talking about our Bible search programs in the green room. Do you feel like you got it figured out?
You know, I'm getting better and better. I'm getting better and better at searching the Bible. Isn't that good news?
What a pastor we have over here.
Yes. So, in all fairness, I have this discontinued Bible program that I absolutely love, and it's lightning fast.
Straight out of Windows 3.1?
Yes, actually. Yeah. That's when I started using it. And
for our younger listeners, that was an old operating system.
When I was using WordPerfect, just so you know.
Oh, man.
But anyway, I am now having to learn Logos a little better, and I'm in business. I think I'm in business. So I'm excited about that.
I feel like this is a triumph. I've been trying to encourage you to use Logos for a long time, and you were so pleased with the other one that you would not flip to the new one.
Well, I use it for other stuff. I've used it for commentaries and other things, but not for like straight up Bible searches. But now with my class, I'm using it for display and different things like that. But I wasn't very good with the search. So now you help me with the search and I'm in business.
It's exciting stuff. Exciting stuff.
We're sorry, listeners.
We're sorry, listeners.
We're sorry we can't do any better than this.
Yeah. Speaking of flip-flopping from one spot to another, if you're listening to the campaign or paying attention at least a little bit, which we assume after Labor Day people maybe are now, perhaps you have heard about presidential nominee Kamala Harris and her flip-flopping of many positions in hopes of gaining support from various constituencies. She has flipped from previously very progressive positions to maybe one would say more moderate or potentially more conservative positions. And some of those are different stances on Medicare for All. She liked it in the past, now she doesn't like it. She used to want to ban fracking and now she doesn't want to ban fracking. And one might think, well, she's trying to win Pennsylvania and they like fracking in Pennsylvania, so maybe that's a good idea. Or
North Dakota.
She's definitely aiming for the votes of North Dakota. Definitely possible.
I think everyone aims for North Dakota.
Or maybe one of the most notable, there was a bipartisan immigration bill that almost was passed through the Senate, but it was not passed. And she mentioned a little while ago that she would, if something like that came across her desk, she'd sign it, which is a flip-flop from previous stances on immigration. So I don't necessarily want to talk about the policies, but I'd love to talk about
flip-flopping.
Yes,
because like Eric was a politician at one time, you know.
That's true.
So he wants to talk about flip-flopping.
I don't know if there's any record of me flip-flopping on anything though. So maybe we'll get some attack ads from that, but
okay, for the next time.
But let's talk about flip-flopping. You can look up, you could probably just Google, you could probably chat GPT.
Yes, you can. Done.
Oh, Scott loves that stuff. You could probably Google, hey, what politicians have flip-flopped? And you could probably get a pretty quick list. And it sounds like, Scott, you might have a pretty quick list. Are there any big notable ones other than the most recent that we've mentioned here?
Well, the most recent, they're small in comparison to these others, but some of it is I don't have the political recall that you do, so I needed help, and thankfully my intelligence wasn't up to it, but I summoned artificial intelligence for help.
You supplemented with some artificial intelligence.
Yeah, so I asked ChatGPT if there were any notable flip-flops, and it gave me a list. I said, of those, which is worst? And using the criteria of the impact on the candidate's credibility, the significance of the issue, and how damaging it was to their political career, the most notable and worst, according to ChatGPT, flip-flop ever was George H.W. Bush, who said, read my lips, no new taxes, and then went ahead and raised taxes. So that was...
And a lot of pundits would credit that flip-flop for him losing his re-election bid in, would that be 92?
92. Yeah. Even ChatGPT credits that flip-flop for him losing, yes. John Kerry on the Iraq War, Mitt Romney on healthcare reform, Hillary Clinton on something I don't remember, Trans-Pacific Partnership. But then, more recent ones, Barack Obama on gay marriage, which was pretty interesting and I think important for Christians to note. Joe Biden on the Hyde Amendment and Donald Trump on abortion. And the funny thing about the Donald Trump on abortion one is ChatGPT runs a little behind.
Mm-hmm. A couple years behind, yeah.
Yeah, it's referring to him moving from pro-choice to anti-abortion in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
In order to win the candidacy. And then, but it's not talking about his flip-flop.
A couple months ago,
yeah. To back to a pro-choice position. And so, anyway, I just thought that was interesting that it highlighted his flip-flop, but he's flip-flop back. So there you go.
Flipper flopper, yep. Well, so I want to talk.
Why do you want to talk about flip-flopping?
I want to talk about... I want to praise flip-flopping.
Whoa.
So,
okay.
But first, before we go into straight praise of flip-flopping.
I think we need straight up, you know, paragraph from you on this in case you do run for office again.
So first we need to talk about the nature of the flip-flop. So generally flip-flop is someone says something and then later they say something else, something that is
opposite
of what they said before. And a flip-flop is bad. Let's just be obvious. It's bad if you're just straight up breaking a promise. If you said something and then you lie.
That's what the Bush situation was, yes.
In his scenario, we don't want to raise new taxes. And then he got to the budget side of things and really wanted to have a balanced budget. And well, shoot, the only way we can pass this budget and have it be balanced is if we in fact raise new taxes. So that's a bummer. That's we don't like that. But I think there's several scenarios where flip-flopping could be good. A flip-flop is good if someone gained information they didn't have in the first place and learned something new or found out something new or came to an understanding they didn't have before and realized, hey, I was wrong before. Now I understand something that I didn't understand before and I'm changing my position. I'm flip-flopping. And I think in general, we should praise people for that. You worked hard to discern wisdom and maybe you found something that's a little more wise. Maybe you found something that can better help achieve the common good. And rather than stick with your old position just out of stalwart stubbornness, you flipped to something good.
I do think that is probably worth just noting from a human life perspective is that it's really, you know, I'm an old man now. And if I'm not learning new things, if I'm not finding ways to evaluate my old ways of doing things and actually changing, then I'm really pretty stuck. And I don't really think that I want politicians to necessarily be stuck. I want them to find the best possible way for humans to flourish and to accomplish the common good. And if that means they have to do it differently than before, that's fine. Mm-hmm. Even if they... I don't know, made a promise. It's not that I want them to break their promises. I want them to understand what is better, and I want them to pursue what's better rather than say, I must, you know, not flip-flop at any cost.
Mm-hmm. Well, and to have no flip-flopping ever assumes you have full understanding right now.
I was right the first time.
Right. And I gained nothing. I learned nothing. I had it all in the first place.
I was the smartest person in the room to begin with.
Doesn't matter the room. Right.
Yep.
And that's an incredible amount of pride that does not align with reality about your actual intelligence or abilities or understanding about the entirety of the universe. So, I think it's just good. It's a good practice. And I didn't have this written in our notes, but I just listened to an interview with some people talking about parenting and specifically fatherhood, and describing one of the roles of father being what was it? Did they use chief? First repenter. Basically, you as a dad, you need to practice in front of your kids, apologizing, saying you were wrong, repenting, asking for forgiveness. And that's essentially a life of flip-flopping. I did the wrong thing and then realized I did the wrong thing and need to ask forgiveness of you rather than just, nope, I'm the dad and I'm right, always right.
That's changing your mind. That's changing or repenting. It's different than flip-flopping.
Sure.
Well, I think that is one of the things that we probably need to acknowledge, just straight up breaking a promise is not, great.
Right.
But understanding there's a better way to do what I set out to do, and I've learned that, and I'm sorry if, my previous promise was important to you because I think this will accomplish it better. I think that's I wouldn't mind a politician being a stand-up person like that and, admitting they've changed their mind. That's fine. But we're calling it all flip-flopping just for the fun of it.
Well, and that distinction, just lying is not flip-flopping. That's just lying. Right. Yes, that's a good distinction. And I think to your point about finding a better way to skin the cat, as it were, reminds me of Philippians 4, let your reasonableness be known to everyone. The Lord is at hand. I want to, if I were a politician again, even if I'm not, I want to be known as someone who's reasonable. That's a good aim. And I think engaging the world and learning as we go and then changing our mind or tactic or posture accordingly is a reasonable thing to do.
Would reasonableness be one of the criteria that you have for a candidate?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, I think that's probably one of the prerequisite characteristics of someone. We've talked in the past about, do I agree with them on policy? Yes or no, do I agree with that? Do they have the requisite character required for the office? Yes or no, you have to have both yeses to get a vote. And I would say reasonableness should be on your list of, do they have the characteristics necessary?
That's why I asked the question. I was hoping that you'd put it on the list.
You'd, you'd take the bait, yes.
Yes.
And then another thing, it's good in a different way, but I think a flip-flop is good because if you are sitting there thinking, okay, this is my view on something, and this politician who may have great power if they're elected, they have flipped from what was their position to what is my position, I think that's good. Even if they aren't fully invested in that change, because it at least means they have rhetorically bound themselves to that position. If you've gone out publicly and said, we can use the fracking thing. I was against fracking, and now I'm doing this national stage thing, and I'm going to say, you know what? I don't think banning fracking is the best idea. If she gets elected and then tries to push an actual ban on fracking, there's going to be a whole bunch of ammunition saying, actually, you said this, and that you can't appeal to some type of mandate saying when they voted for me, they voted for me to ban fracking. No, you explicitly said otherwise. So any flipping towards your position, you should praise, like applaud, even if it's not as full-throated of an endorsement as you would give. There's still a rhetorical handcuffing, as it were, that is going to probably lead to better outcomes.
I mean, the first thing I want to ask you is, it's like, what if they flip-flop away from my position? Almost everything on the list was a flip-flop. The worst list that I had was a flip-flop away from my position.
Well, I think that gets our the main question I want to think about. Because you talked about abortion, or you talked about Trump flipping from pro-choice to a pro-life stance. And we know he flip-flopped again from a pro-life stance, not to a pro-life stance.
And Obama on gay marriage and others that were flip-flopping, you might say, away from my positions.
And I think the question we need to ask first, and this is really a corollary from last week, whose side are you on? What party represents you? And if we start with, actually, no party represents me, I'm going to stand, and this is going to sound really highfalutin, but I'm going to stand with the truth.
Highfalutin. You heard it here. You can be highfalutin, too.
Highfalutin. You guys should have heard the vocabulary we're using before this. We just sounded ridiculous and pedantic. But anyway.
It was highfalutin.
It was definitely highfalutin. But our goal should not be, I would encourage you, your goal is not, okay, which party do I like the best? And I'm going to align myself with those, with that party, come what may. And that's a lot of what we talked about last week. Instead, your goal should be, what is true? What is good? What is beautiful? And align yourself with that. So then you can evaluate any politician. And when they flip away from you, you can say, hey, I don't need to support you. You flipped away from me because I am sitting with a position or with an understanding of what is true rather than the desires of a particular party or desires of a particular apparatus. And so I would say you don't have to support. When someone flips away from your position, you can critique. You can say, I disagree with you.
Even if they're in my party?
Quote unquote, my party. Yeah, right. We've jettisoned that idea, but yes.
Okay.
So, and that's, I think, what this conversation is a corollary from last week. So my encouragement to you is to attempt to sit on the side of truth and realize that at any given time, politicians or parties will not be sitting on the side with you. They'll be sitting somewhere else. But if they flip toward you or get closer to you, you should applaud and say, hey, good idea. You're coming the right direction.
Well, see, your answer assumes that I'm not bought into every plank in a party platform, that I've evaluated the issues independently, maybe as a Christian, so I can do my best to understand what would reflect the kingdom of heaven the best.
Mm-hmm.
And that way, if somebody moves my direction, that's good. If they move away from me, that's bad. Mm-hmm. But I can't start from a party platform
right. With
that. Otherwise, then I've got some sort of party betrayal or partisan betrayal, shall we say, that is, a complicating issue there.
Well, yeah, this does assume a level of work, investment.
Well, that's what we talked about last week.
Yeah.
I mean, last week we were trying to say, be independent of a party platform. And that's, I think, the way you're approaching the flip-flopping assumes that we were very successful last week and everyone
nailed it.
Is completely independent of party platform.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you have to be if you're going to handle it the way you're describing.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say if I'm pondering this, I want to do the right thing, I want to represent Christ well in the world, but man, I don't have enough time to think about planks or policies or politicians. Now I want to come up with another P word, but I just don't have time to think about all those things. What would you recommend?
I would recommend doing your best.
So as much as you can.
Yeah.
And so if I can give an hour before I vote, giving an hour of time is worthwhile, and maybe the amount that you invest probably dictates the amount you are attached to as well.
Well, I would hope that the investment is made not in the political side of things, but in the kingdom side of things.
Mm-hmm.
So that going to church, going to life group, reading your Bible year after year after year after year helps you identify some of the places where a party platform would not jibe with the values of Jesus. Then when you look at a candidate or policies or something, it will be much faster for you. So that would be my first thing, would be all of the backlog of what I hope you're doing as a disciple of Jesus will make that faster. But yeah, if all you have is an hour before you vote to take that backlog and run a candidate through whatever grid you've developed, that's... Mm-hmm. I think that's, that's a place to start.
Yeah.
You don't have to spend hours and hours. In fact, probably would be bad kingdom stewardship for you to spend, days and days or weeks and weeks at this process.
Well, and I like the encouragement of go to church, read your Bible, understand who Jesus is and what he's doing in the world. It reminds me of Philippians 4:8. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there's any excellence, if there's anything worthy of praise, think about these things. And I think a lot of times the temptation would be to let me invest in counter arguments about why all these other things are wrong. And Philippians 4 is saying something along the lines of, why don't you just invest in understanding what is good and true and beautiful and excellent? And if you spend all your time there and you see something that is deficient compared to those things or broken compared to those things, it will be far easier. But I'm just saying it'll be easier to see what doesn't fit if you understand what is the good, rather than, oh, this is bad and this is bad and this party platform is bad and blah, blah, blah. If I spend my time understanding the character of Jesus and investing in understanding who he is and how he talked about the world and how he talked about the kingdom and the characteristics he encouraged, then when I see something different than that, I can easily go, oh, I don't need to engage that. That's different than what Jesus said or how Jesus said it. And that's a far better use of time than investing in a, I don't know, a political degree or something.
Political degree. Please no. Yeah. I think there's one other issue that related to this that I would want to at least bring up, and this is more, this is maybe less spiritual, you might say, but I think some of the things you've heard probably, and the reason you wanted to bring this up, is that you have probably heard concern that Kamala Harris's supposed flip-flopping indicates that she's somehow stealing oxygen from Trump's campaign, or that's her intent. That's certainly what he accuses her of, that she's moved to a position that's new for her and formerly belonged to her opponent, so she's moving from a Democratic position to a Republican position, and you might think of it as like a ground game where she's invading foreign turf or something. That's I think how this has come to us through, well,
from as if a party has a monopoly on good ideas.
Yeah, they've staked out. Let's say they, you know, in some respect have staked out certain ideas, and to invade that is bad. And I think that the way you might continue to say it is that one, you might say that she is moderating her position, or on some of those issues anyway, becoming more moderate. Okay, is that a problem? It's only a problem, I think, if the extreme position is important to partisan identity, or maybe to your partisan identity. Then to be moderate is a threat to the extreme. And that's where I think that's some of the signaling that we're getting is this moderation or this invasion of territory is a problem because, you know, it doesn't work for me to position my opponent at the extreme either. I think this love of the extremes is one of the things that's sort of driven American politics and American partisanship to such high levels and made it so antagonistic. And it's likely that a moderate position or moderate positions might actually be good for the country.
Oh, I'd say in high likelihood they are.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know. I'm not even thinking of a moderate position in specific, but in general, that's one of the reasons that you have a process that that should include healthy debate and healthy conversation so that you can arrive at, you know, compromises or positions that are somehow in the middle or able to address multiple concerns instead of just an extreme concern that one party would represent. So seems to me that that's where the noises come from, is this perceived invasion of territory and the threat that it is to the extreme position and the inability then to position her in particular as an extremist on the other side. So that it's a kind of a marketing positioning problem among other things. And, you know, in some respect, it's a system problem too. I mean, I think the way that party primaries reward extremes is, I think that's a problem. I don't mm-hmm. really get to vote in. That's one of the reasons I don't really get to vote in the primaries, because I'm unaffiliated. But that's part of the reason I don't, is because the extremes drive me crazy. Mm. That's one of the reasons that I did that. And that's rewarded in the primary system. Then you get these extreme candidates mm-hmm. against one another, and there's like no middle ground. And you just scratch your head thinking, why can't I find somebody normal to vote for?
Right.
And I think we have a little bit of a party system problem here that it could be possible to fix, but that's a different podcast probably.
It's probably a different podcast for sure. And I think it's been exacerbated in the last several cycles.
Seems like
The primary, the people who aim towards the extreme to get the primary support in the past would tack toward the middle, tack toward moderation in the general. That doesn't happen anymore. Now it's, if you tack toward the middle, by your own party, you are labeled as a sellout or as a not a true believer or something ridiculous. And I think if you're pondering your response to someone flip-flopping, if it's someone on your own side, or if it's someone on the other side and you're going, I can't believe they're encroaching our space, you're probably party brain. Like, it's just partisan brain, and kind of step back. But if you are trying to sit with the party of truth, as it were, and someone from a different party that you don't normally support flips toward you, you should say, oh, sweet. They were coming towards my position. And even if I don't want that person, if I wouldn't vote for that person or whatever, they're at least lending support towards positions I agree with, which will, at least in my view, be better for the country or for the state or for the city or for mm-hmm. whatever. So you can almost use that as a little barometer. Do I have partisan brain and I just attack any rhetorical flip because, oh man, they're taking territory that's supposed to be mine or supposed to be our teams? Or can it be, no, I care about ideas. I care about positions. I care about wise ways of interacting in the world in a governmental way. And if anyone, regardless of team, comes to my position, I should go, you know what, this is good. I don't agree with them on a lot of things, but I can at least agree with them on this thing because they flipped my direction.
Agreeing with somebody on one thing is a good thing.
Yeah.
Finding common ground with somebody.
That sounds reasonable.
That's a human thing that should be good. But yeah, some of the, I was just thinking as you were talking about how the people moderate in the general election. I mean, I believe that there are some fairly well-documented cases of one party supporting the radical candidate in the other party in primaries because financially and things, because mm-hmm. they'd be easier to defeat in the general election.
Yes.
And, I mean, talk about a crazy world. But it's this very thing we're talking about.
Right.
Is that people have such partisan brains and love for the extremes that they're afraid when somebody's going to have a moderate or position or perhaps change to one that might actually be better for the common good. So mm-hmm. anyway, that's kind of all I've got on this. But
well, fantastic. Well, if you have any questions about any of this stuff, send it our way. We are curious what you think. Think about the party of truth, as we've just coined. But until next time, don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast. Rate us. If you find what we're doing helpful, a review goes a long way. Why don't you share this with a friend, throw it in a text chain, or post it to Facebook or something and say, hey, this was interesting. I would love to know what you think as well. And if you have questions, send them to comment@cityonahillpodcast.com. And we look forward to the next conversation.
You like how I got that out there before?
Yeah, good move. Play. You knew what I would do with that for sure. Okay. 3, 2, 1.